The following is a presentation for McDonald's Signature Crafted Recipes and The Fork, a utensil that sort of looks and works like a fork, but with French fries. Stay tuned.
Some of us, most of us, we've all done terrible things on behalf of the Rebellion. Spies, saboteurs, assassins. Everything I did for the Rebellion. And every time I walked away from something I wanted to forget, I told myself it was for a cause that I believed in. A cause that was worth it. Without that, we're lost. Everything we've done would have been for nothing.
All they do is suck money in. They take our taxes
or donations, whatever.
Of pre-tax dollars from pot-taking Bolshevik lesbian couples. Then PBS mixes it all in with their huge NEA grants, launders it in inner-city methadone clinics, and pumps it right back out to pro-abortion super PACs.
The Fork is ludicrously easy to use. Its ergonomic design makes it handy for righties and lefties. The Fork even works in the dark.
Okay, push the right button, Dave. Which I did.
Congratulations.
Jeez, man, you sound like death.
Dude, my sister got bronchitis. My hope is that I will just feel a little bit weird for the rest of tonight and then wake up tomorrow morning feeling better.
Everyone wants to be like me, be like you. Satisfied.
Hey, welcome aboard, everybody. It's me, Dave.
And I'm John.
And we are, well, Netflix and Dave and John. Good to have you aboard. As you're about to find out. John, damn you.
Sorry,
we've been talking about this show for, what, a week and a half now, getting ready for this. This is kind of the last show for a while. I'm in the move, so we're kind of putting this to bed. And we've been planning this very carefully. In the middle of all this, John gets me hooked on a Netflix show called Black Mirror.
And Black Mirror, I would say, for people who don't know, Black Mirror is, I feel it's picked up the torch of Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits.
Oh, in so many ways, you are so right.
You know what I mean? Like the Twilight, it has like the really kind of like dark, angry twist of the Twilight Zone and the strictly kind of sci-fi of the Outer Limits, although no aliens really. And it also, the interesting thing about Black Mirror is that every one of them feels like it could take place next week.
Yes.
Like it's very near future.
Like stuff that's already in it, you've heard about, and maybe sometimes you've gone, oh, that's crazy, that would never happen, and then you go, wait, I just saw that on the news. Or something similar to that. So John got me hooked on this show, and you're going to find out why a little bit later in the show. But this show is, it's amazing in the one sense. There's one thing I don't like about the show, and that is this goddamn British accents. I have the hardest time understanding what the hell they are saying. Especially, have you seen the last one, hated out in the country or whatever it is?
Hated in the nation. That's my favorite one.
That is a fantastic episode. But I had to watch it three times to understand half of what they were saying.
What I eventually wound up doing, kind of just out of noisiness necessity, is I put on subtitles, and I found that really helped.
The only word I could understand her saying was the bad words, because she would only say those words. She would say fuck, shit. And then move on. And fantastic
stuff.
And they're all standalone episodes. That's the other thing I like about it.
Yeah, so you can jump around, which is, you know, we were talking about one of the episodes of the show is germane to a topic that we will be addressing here. And so I told Dave, I said, Dave, you got to watch this one specific episode. And because it's like an anthology format, you can kind of just pick up wherever and check one or two of them out. Which is kind of, I think that's the recommended way for, at least as far as I'm concerned, to jump into it, is if you know somebody who watches the show and you want to see if you'll like it or not, have them suggest an episode to you.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. I'm hooked. I'm three or four episodes into it. And I started with season three, so then I got to go back to season. I'm trying to decide, should I go all the way back to one or should I just go to two, since I've already jumped around and there's no sense in staying in order in this thing. Which is what Netflix has done. Netflix has changed how we watch freaking television completely. Now we can do what we want. Whereas, so how do I explain this best? TV shows. I like Fargo, the TV show.
Yeah.
The TNT series or whoever it does. I love that show. I don't know why. But I'm so pissed off the other day because the new season started, but there's one episode.
And you want to watch more.
And I get done with that episode and I'm like, damn, what happens next? And I got to wait a whole week before I can find out. So what do we end up doing, John? I don't know what you do, but this is what I do. The two shows that I really enjoy, Fargo and The Detour, I don't watch them. I just let the DVR build up and build up and build up until I can watch at least five of them in a row.
That's kind of a smart way to do it. You know, have like a few shows that you jump back and forth between and have like three or four episodes built up that you haven't seen. So, because, yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, if I've got time to sit down and watch something, I don't want to just sit down for 30 minutes and then be like, well, okay, that was over, or an hour, or whatever it winds up being. You know, well, you want to sit down for a little bit, maybe right. Like kind of live in that world for a minute.
Even the UHF channels, what we used to call the UHF channels, I don't know if you ever called them that, but you know,
yeah,
the 58s, the 58s, the 67s, those. Even around here, I don't know about down there, but even here, the UHF channels, man, they show you four or five episodes of a sitcom, you know, that's syndicated in a row. They don't just show you one, they show you five. BBC America does that. Yeah, let's put on a Star Trek marathon today or a Doctor Who marathon or whatever. So you're not just watching one. I mean, you get this thing that's feeding on and on, and network television has just not picked up on this. It's like,
it feels very archaic now too. Like, just the way that they do it, you know, after seeing the Netflix way, even Hulu, which is a digital streaming product, when they release their like original programming, they do it a week at a time. Ugh. And I have no idea why.
It's very frustrating. I mean, here I'm 53 years old. I'm living in the 21st century. John, when I was a kid, when I was Ben's age, we had three channels and a UHF channel on a black and white TV with a rabbit ear antenna and maybe a coat hanger. And, you know, we just didn't really watch a whole lot of TV. I mean, maybe on a Sunday afternoon, a football game or something. I remember listening to football on the radio because it was blacked out. I mean, you couldn't even get it on. I remember this. I remember changing the channels. Now I'm bitching about the fact that I can't get enough of TV as quickly as I wanted. My, how times have changed.
You know, I was going to say, like, it almost seems like a moral, you know, quandary. Like, you know, are we so entitled that we need to have all of our shows all at once? But really, the more you think about it, the more it's just like, no, this is the way things are headed. You know,
right,
like on-demand content.
But is it the right?
I mean, why shouldn't you be able to have it when you want it?
Well, that's an interesting question that you should pose that way. Why can't I just do whatever the hell I want to do the way I want to do it? Huh? Why can't I just do that? So there you go. Well, like I said, this is the last show for a while. We've changed plans. I don't know if I told you this. We're not going to Tacoma. We are going to Bremerton, which is,
oh, cool,
roughly 40 miles, 45 miles north of Tacoma. Although,
yeah, that's closer to my parents.
Right. Where do your folks live?
My folks live in Squim.
Yes. Yes, it is much closer. And which means you'll be coming through, I'm anticipating, and on your way through from there, which is great because the house buying experience that I was lamenting the other day, I mean, this has been a freaking roller coaster, man. I went up to Washington to buy a house, found out we couldn't buy one. Then the next day, we chatted with Pat the lawyer, believe it or not, and we went, oh, we can buy a house, just not today, right? So the roller coaster went back up again. Then it went, nope, you can't do it, and it went back down. And then today again, it's back up with, holy crap, they changed this. And so we're back to, anyway, we're going to have a house in Bremerton is what it's going to come down to probably within a year, John. So
right.
I expect to see you on your way through. But the flip side of that is we are going to have to rent for some time. Whether that's a month or a year is still, you know, kind of up in the air, but we're going to have to rent for a while, which means, John, and this is killing me, I wasn't going to tell Cammie, and it kind of came out today in a tangential discussion. I can't take Lola. I can't take my German Shepherd.
Really?
And it's killing me. I got I got no place to put her. I got no place to put her while I'm renting.
I'm always surprised when places turn out not to be pet friendly. Like, what do they picture happening? I mean, well, it's not like
it's not even
the
that
dog much. Is going to chew through the wall.
Right. It's not even that as much. And Lola's perfect. I mean, she's house trained. She doesn't chew on things. It's the cost. I mean, they want $500 for, you know, a pet deposit. They want $250 for a pet application fee.
What?
And another $50 a month in rent for a pet. And, of course, you know, it's just, I mean, it gets to the point where you're like, God damn, I can't afford this. And my mother has too many dogs already. So I actually have a meeting with a guy on Friday to try to rehome Lola. And it's killing me. This is the second time I've had to do this now in 5 years. And it's killing me. I mean, absolutely killing me.
I'm sorry, man.
Oh, well, life goes on, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the theory, right?
unless you're the Bachelor and somebody tries to kill you, then it doesn't. Or unless you're McDonald's and you're creating something called a, what do they call that thing, a fork?
I looked it up, the fork. It looks like it's basically like a plastic, receptacle into which you can stab 3 McDonald's French fries.
Which are always perfectly straight and always exactly the same length.
Well, but you always have at least a few that are, you know, that are crispy enough that you could probably use them for this purpose.
Right.
You know?
And so your French fries become your fork.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which, I don't know. Do we need that?
It just seems like a marketing gimmick to me. I mean, do we need it? No. I watched the video. They have a stupid video for this where they have one of those, what do they call those things? Like Billy May. You know, sales pitch kind of thing, where he's trying
like
to convince you.
Right. Yeah, like infomercial.
Right, infomercial. That's the word I was looking for. And they're trying to convince you that all your stuff is falling off your hamburger. Now, I've eaten a lot of McDonald's hamburgers in my life, John. A lot of McDonald's. Way more than I ever should have eaten. I have, with one exception, I've never had a problem with stuff falling off my McDonald's hamburger. The only exception was, and I don't know if you're even old enough to remember this, the, what the hell do they call that thing? The McSomething, McCool, McHot. It had a plastic thing that it came in.
Oh,
hot on one side and the cool on the other.
The McDLT.
The McDLT. That's the only one I ever had problems with things falling off.
The hot side is hot and the cold side is cold.
Right,
and then
because
you match them together.
They wouldn't put them together for you, so of course stuff was going to fall off of it. That's where I needed a fork, not now. Nothing ever falls off my cheeseburger.
Not in the future. Yeah. You know, I guess I've probably had, you know, the odd, like, pickle mishap or whatever, or, you know, a little a dollop of ketchup shooting out one side or whatever. But I wouldn't say that I've had so many problems with bits falling off of any McDonald's product of any kind, other than the lettuce that they put on those Big Macs. That's a damn liability.
Right, right. I'd agree.
But beyond that, I don't know that I've had so many problems that it necessitated the creation of a food utensil made of food.
Right, and plastic, just in case. Well,
right.
It's got to be just a marketing gag. That's all it is. It's all it can be. I don't know if you knew this or not, but McDonald's is doing away with the orange high C, which doesn't bother me or you, but there are people I know who are absolutely apoplectic about the idea that McDonald's is taking away the orange high C. And I said to one of the McDonald's people today, this is just a marketing gig. This is just a new Coke gambit. In 6 months, maybe 12, you're going to run a whole ad campaign about, we're bringing it back. The McDonald's orange
high.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, they're going to be like, we heard you. America has spoken. Well, right. Orange High C is back.
Just like new Coke. You know, we've heard our customers. We know what you really want, and we're going to bring it back, and everybody will be happy then. Right? Especially with their new drink machines, which I do love. I want to be clear. I love their new, raspberry Dr. Pepper thing that I can, which I can't get here. All I can get is cherry Dr. Pepper, but I do love those new machines. But they, Cammy came home the other day with an orange creamsicle soda. I'm like, that's the nastiest thing I've ever tasted.
I haven't had it.
I don't know about down there, but up here at the McDonald's, they have these machines.
Oh, right? I know what you're talking about. Yeah, the, what do they call it? There's a specific name for it. It's like the ultimate Coke machine. You can add all kinds of shit to all kinds of other shit.
Right, but not everything. You can't get raspberry Dr. Pepper. You can get raspberry Coke, but not Dr. Pepper, which makes no sense to me at all. And it's the kind of thing that sets me off on this mission of saying, you know what? I should just take matters into my own hand, do things the way I want to do it, and make them give me raspberry Dr. Pepper. And then I could slap a Punisher sign on it and say, mission accomplished. Sorry, that's a hell of a segue, isn't it?
Yeah, that was a little train wrecky, Dave. I'm gonna allow it, though. It's your show.
Well, it's our show, man. My show.
I'm just a guest.
Yeah. Way to bail on me. Thanks for all your support there.
Yeah.
Talking all week about getting rid of this Punisher stuff, and then when we finally bring it in, John's like, no, I'm not going there. I don't want anything to do with that. So we got a text this week. We do get texts, and you want to send us one, you can. Area code 209, which is weird because neither of us are going to be in the 209 here pretty soon. Yeah. But we're going to keep that number. 565-3283 or 209 LOL date, laugh out loud date. You can email me, Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. If you want to send one to John, just send it to that and put his name on it, and I'll make sure he gets it. But I just wasn't sure you wanted to give out your email address. So.
No, that's fair. Yeah, you've always been really good about sending me my cards and letters.
Right. So we got a text from Mojav, who's down in Mojave. Hey, Mojav, nice to have you with us, who's been
a loyal
listener for many, many years. And out of the blue, he asks me about this Punisher thing. Now, I got to admit, I had no clue what he was talking about. I did not know. I mean, I've seen these things, these skulls with the three long teeth in the front. I guess that's what they are. I had no idea what that. I'm not a comic book guy. I'm not really an action movie guy. I mean, I saw the Tony Stark movies, but that's pretty much it. I never even saw Superman, okay? Never seen it. I've caught the Batman flicks here and there, the one with Danny DeVito and a couple of the other ones, but it's just not my thing. So I had no idea what this thing was, and I see it everywhere, and I think, oh, well, geez, here's another fad taking the country by storm. But it turns out that this is the symbol of a movie character, comic book character, by the name of Punisher, who you probably know more about than I do, but as I understand it, he's an anti-villain or anti-hero. I'm so confused.
He's a vigilante, and probably he's an anti-hero, like, kind of depending on how they portray him.
Which is kind of what I told Mojav. I said, I'm so lost without John, I have no idea what this was. But that's the first I finally realized what these signs were, this Punisher sign. So I don't know why people put this on things. Given its meaning or what it symbolizes, why would you put this on something, I guess, is kind of my question. Because really the upshot of this whole thing is it's just sort of vigilante justice. Do whatever the hell you want. The ends justifies the means. And here's my skull logo to prove it. See? Smack. And
right.
There you have it. And it's showing up everywhere. And I mean everywhere. There's a... go ahead.
I've seen cops have it, like, on the back of their truck and... You know, lots of retired military and that kind of thing.
But see, that comes back to that bothers me. Why would a cop adopt a symbol of what is essentially lawlessness as there? Or am I overanalyzing this?
I don't know. It makes me a little uncomfortable, too. You know, like... In the same way that, and we kind of, oh man, I don't even know why I'm taking the lid off of this particular jar, but, you know, we talked a little while back
about. That's what we
do. We talked a little while back about the whole Black Lives Matter situation, and, you know, isn't it true that, you know, that black people are more, you know, statistically more likely to, you know, get shot at or whatever, you know, by the cops? And more, you know, beyond just like, you know, having questions about this sort of thing. There seems to be a sentiment that if you question it at all and say, hey, maybe there's a problem worth looking at here, then you're un-American and you hate the cops, you know, that kind of thing. Like it's like saying, like, do we really need to be in Afghanistan? It's like, oh, you hate the troops. You don't support the troops.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it's like I kind of have a problem with it sort of in that same way. Like, don't we want our police to sort of be like the best of us? You know what I mean? Like, and so, yeah, like, so when they adopt a symbol like that, or even really when, you know, American soldiers adopt a symbol like that, it's kind of just like, I don't know. It makes me a little uneasy. Like, but my take on it is this, and this is the reason I had you watch that that episode of Black Mirror. The one in question is called Men Against Fire and deals with the difficulty involved in getting soldiers to want to fight other human beings, right? Like, you know,
right.
There was a whole, they rattled off a bunch of statistics, like only 28% of people ever fired a shot in World War I or something like that. Who knows whether or not they're true or not, but they kind of made sense to me because I could sort of see that. Like, here you are in somebody else's country. Like, how gung-ho are you to really shoot at this guy? Even if you really think that they're doing the wrong thing, people just don't want to kill each other.
Right. And that was all, those stats were actually true. Well, at least quoted true. They were
true-ish.
Well, they're from a book by a U.S. general by the name of S.L.A. Marshall. But no, I don't know that anybody's ever verified his research. But you're right. It was something along the lines of 75% of people in World War II didn't even fire their guns, and those that did fired over the heads of the enemy.
Right. So the point I was kind of trying to get at is that I think that it sort of behooves a soldier to sort of adopt a mindset, even kind of a sort of like pretendish one, that allows them to perform their duties as assigned. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Like, you know, yeah, I've seen this with my friends that joined the military and sort of went out and came back. And they came back and they're a little bit different because you have to integrate a side of, you know, to your personality that maybe wasn't there before, but that allows you to do the things that are required of you. Like, if you had to shoot a missile, Dave, like, you would need to really quickly, like, you know, put on your badass hat and do it for your country. You know, despite the presumed loss of massive amounts of life wherever that missile was going.
And then you add in, John, just a tangent, in that scenario, you add in the fact that we're isolated, so we don't have any news, we don't have any outside contact, we don't have any visual on anything. Mm-hmm. And who's controlling what we're thinking and feeling?
Right, right. So, yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is that, like, with this whole Punisher thing or whatever, like, you know, I know a lot of like former and current military guys and, you know, current guys who, you know, work with private security firms and stuff like that. And they have sort of adopted this symbol as, you know, their idea of, you know, a badass sort of taking care of business or whatever. And so I don't think it's as much about the fact that the Punisher is sort of lawless as it is about getting them into that mindset where they do what they believe is required of them and what has to be done.
Okay, I'm with you there. I mean, I certainly understand the idea of putting yourself in the mindset. It's not an easy thing to do. I've talked on my show, I've talked about the one circumstance where I was handed a retarget and strike message, and I thought it was real. For probably 15 seconds, I believed we were going to do this. But you're right. It does change your mindset. But here's the question. Number one, how many of these cops, particularly cops, we'll get to soldiers and others in a minute here, but particularly cops, how many of you do you think actually know what that symbol is? And does that matter?
I wonder. I would say, considering that, you know, that most of these people are like guys of kind of a certain age, probably I would say like maybe 80% of males my age know who the Punisher is.
Okay.
You know, and I'm, for reference, I'm 37. You know, so anybody, you know, my age and a little younger or a little older would almost certainly know, I would think, you know, who he was. But yeah, I mean, I would also not be surprised if, to a certain extent, the adoption of this symbol has sort of, you know, gone away from whatever its original intent was and sort of just become one of those appropriated things. You know, like, you remember, I don't see him as much anymore, but, you know, you used to be able to drive around and look on the backs of trucks and stuff and see symbols, you know, the sticker of Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes, right, like peeing right. on the Ford logo, or Calvin, you know, kneeling in front of a cross or whatever. And it's like, how many of these people know that that's supposed to be Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes? And or are they really just buying the sticker to respond to, you know, whatever it is that they saw that pissed them off?
Right.
You know,
did it create in them a mindset? So, you know, when you say that, and that's fine and dandy, but what if it were another symbol? I mean, what if it was a, you know, hammer and sickle, or, God, I hate doing this, Godwin's Law. You know, what if it was a swastika?
Right.
I mean, the fact is that someday people are going to lose meanings of those symbols. Does it matter?
I wonder if that's true of at least the swastika.
Yeah, probably not the swastika, but there are other symbols.
I see what you're saying, though. You know, arguably the stars and bars,
the Confederate flag.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who? You talk to people who fly that flag, and they don't really know what it's for. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I wonder. I think at the end of the day, you know, the Punisher ultimately is sort of looked at by Marvel as mostly a good guy. He's kind of got like his code, you know, like he only goes after mobsters. He has a fairly rigorous vetting system, you know, in most depictions of the character, where he's sure that they're bad guys.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I mean, it's,
so was Stripe. He was sure that those what did they call those things? Stripe was sure that those other people
yeah.
were.
Oh, the roaches.
The roaches. He was sure that the roaches were bad, too. He just didn't know. See what I'm saying? I don't know. Don't spoil it if people haven't seen it. And what happens when somebody who does recognize that symbol for what it is, for lawlessness and vigilante justice, I mean, is it possible that it's being used as a communicative device like the old hobos used to use when they would scratch, you know, things on the side?
Secret hobo symbol?
Right. But what if it's being used? I mean, look at the white power symbols that are out there today that we don't know. Look at the gang signs that happen around us every day that we don't recognize what is.
Right.
I wouldn't, you know, somebody flashed me a gang sign, I would have no idea what the heck they were doing. But
right.
somebody else who did would pick up on that. Is there an element of that, do you think? I mean, is it possible, or am I just, again, overthinking this?
I don't know that I would, like, create some kind of secret society behind it, you know. I think it's, I don't know. But being non-military and non-police, you know, I'm just like a civilian dude or whatever, who you know, tries to think about things, I guess. I'm not sure. I guess it's possible that there is, you know, there's more to it.
Right.
But well, I kind of don't think so. I kind of think it's just sort of like, you know, hey, the Punisher, Frank Castle, you know, he's one of our guys or whatever, you know. Like,
I certainly hope that's the case.
He fights a good fight.
I certainly hope that's the case. My problem with it is that I have a fundamental problem with the idea of how policing is done in America today. Not the police officers themselves, but this idea that we use police to essentially enforce government policy at the point of a gun. And that we're seeing more and more stories about police officers who, for whatever reason, don't seem to have read the Fourth or Fifth Amendments. Oh. And okay, sure, it's a minority. It's a very small minority. But...
Well, but then there's a whole attitude, like, we're right. not even supposed to be the able to talk attitude, about that minority.
Exactly, the attitude. And what happens? I mean, here in Modesto, we had the story. You know, I was listening to one of our classics a couple weeks ago, and we had the story about the cops that clearly violated the Fourth Amendment. And the answer was, we just signed a non-disclosure agreement. We don't talk about it. So nobody gets on the stand and says, I'm an idiot. I didn't read the Fourth Amendment. Nobody's accountable for it. And we just pay off some people and we forget about it. Well, what then happens the next time? Well, we found out here in Modesto, the next time, instead of $100,000, it costs us $600,000, which is, you know, I guess that's good, but we're still not talking about it. We're still not getting it out there in the open. We're still not addressing the issue of, is there a fundamental problem with the way that we do policing? Where's the protect and serve? Who are we protecting and serving versus what are we protecting and serving? I guess is, and it bothers me that a symbol that represents, screw it, do whatever the ends justify the means, he was a bad guy, so we shot him,
Right.
I'm a little uncomfortable with that. I really am.
Well, I am too. And I think that we've kind of reached a point in society where you almost are asked to just accept certain things about certain people, regardless of whether or not they're good or bad. You know, I mean, everybody wants to talk about identity politics and how it's infected the left so terribly, but I think it exists on the right as well, and it's the sort of thing where it's like,
oh yeah,
it's almost like if you're on the right, you support the cops no matter what they're doing,
right,
and you know are into the troops no matter who we're at war with, you know, and if you don't like the war, it means you don't like the troops, and you know, and I don't think that those things are true. I think you can be conservative without buying into those sorts of things, because the interest of having a police force that, I mean, is truly here to protect and serve all of the citizenry is in literally everybody's best interest.
Yeah.
So it's alarming to me that we're not apparently allowed to have a conversation about that stuff anymore.
Which is kind of weird. And of course, this gets to the heart of what Mojav was asking, and the symbol that represents this, and then the use of it on the Blue Lives Matter, on American flags, it just, the symbol of what it represents, whether somebody actually knows that or not, to me, is a gray area, but the symbol is antithetical to the values that those organizations should hold.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it muddies the message. I wonder if that sort of thing is being adopted because the original symbols that, you know, traditionally represent those values and organizations are no longer cutting it in, you know, the new sort of way of thinking, you know, like, you know, maybe now that our police have, you know, effectively been militarized or, you know, turned into more of a, you know, a secret police kind of thing where, you know, you shall ask no questions and, you know, we have unilateral authority, you know, maybe the old protect and serve thing is just kind of a tired old concept. And now we, you know, need to have this Punisher guy, you know, who sort of takes matters into his own hands and does what needs to be done.
Yeah. What bothers me most about it is that there is at least one, probably more, but one that I found for certain, subgroup of the AQ, subgroup of ISIL, that has adopted this as their sub. They hate everything American.
Yeah.
But by God, they love Punisher.
That guy.
Yeah, they love the Punisher and his symbol. It, man, because again, it represents what they believe in, which is anarchy. Doing it, you know, basically vigilante justice, taking matters and justifies the means, and they're fine with that, and they seem to know that. Whereas, for some reason, our guys don't seem to know that, and I'm just kind of curious why. What I'm missing. I'm sure that listeners have opinions about this. 565 Dave or 565 Lowell date. It wouldn't be 565. It'd be 209 Lowell date. Jeez, Dave, get the frickin' phone number right. My email is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And if you want to send one to John, just send that to me, dave@thedavebowmanshow.com, and put his name on it.
This is where I do the thing that I always do and have a little disclaimer here. Look, I know a lot of cops, and I love them to death. Steve Stanfield, I ran into him over the weekend. He is
literally
one of the finest men to put on the uniform, in my opinion.
He's a super.
I just think that we should have an open line of communication when it comes to this stuff.
And that's the point, John. If we can't talk about it, then we really do have a problem. If we can talk about it, then we probably don't have a problem. But it seems like we're headed in a direction where we can't talk about it.
Right,
and that makes me nervous, especially when I see symbols like that. It just kind of sits there. So anyway, what do you think? 209 Lowell date, laugh out loud date. And there you go. So we're headed north, headed to Bremerton. Cammy and I and the family are headed north. John, still hanging out down in L.A.? Everything going well?
Yeah, things are good, man. I'm attempting not to get sick. I went home for the weekend, and my sister came down with bronchitis in about a 4-hour span on Sunday, which is how it always works for her. You know, she works really, really hard, and as soon as she stops moving, she gets sick.
Yeah,
so I'm hoping not to get that. I'm taking it easy tonight.
You wanna take a minute and talk about why you were up here?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's a fantastic. It's a fantastic cause that I'm absolutely in love with, and I've been a huge fan of them for years. The formerly the Haven Women's Center, but now just known as the Haven Center. They have sort of acknowledged that, you know, there's a lot of like non-gender binary situations where, you know, where people might need help, and also men, you know, occasionally might require their services and stuff. And so now it's really just about anybody who deals with, you know, domestic violence and sexual assault and that kind of thing. And I mean, it's more than just like awareness and you know, handing out brochures for them. I mean, they've got a network where they can get you a place to stay for the night if you need to, if you have to escape a crummy situation or whatever. Anyway, the Haven Center is a fantastic bunch, and every year they do this thing called Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, where guys get together and put on these red high-heeled shoes and literally walk a mile. And it's cool. It's like the old jogathon setup. Like, you go out to your friends and get yourself sponsored, and, you know, they sponsor you to walk, and then you've, you know, you've raised a bunch of money for the organization. And so, you know, so now I'm in L.A. I hosted the thing for maybe the last like 2 or 3 years. And so now that I'm in L.A., I thought for sure, like, you know, that would have been the last of it. But they reached out to me through my former boss there in Modesto, and said, he says, hey, he goes, you can say no, but they asked me to ask you, and, you know, Haven really wants you to come back to host it again this year. And I was so tickled that they would even, you know, that they would want that, you know, because I thought, you know, I was laboring under the impression that I was there because I was arguably a, you know, we used to joke around that I was a regional right. celebrity or right. whatever. But,
that's the term,
you know, I'm not that anymore. I'm not even on air down here. But they wanted me to come back because they love the way that I do it, and they love my enthusiasm for the cause, I think. So it was really sweet of them to ask me, and they offered to pay me, and, you know, which, you know, I mean, they have real things that they do with that money. So I said I would be happy to do it. But yeah, they gave me this cool little like red high heeled shaped bottle opener. It's currently sitting up on the top of my fridge, awaiting a frosty cider to be opened with it. And yeah, it's a great cause. Haven Center of Stanislaus County. If you want to, you know, pitch in and help out, or just, you know, make a donation or something like that, I'm sure they could really use it. It's a great cause and a wonderful bunch of people.
So there you go. That's why that, and I believe that's where you ran into Steve Stanfield.
Yeah, he was down there. He had the shoes strapped on. He came up, and he was in full uniform or whatever, and I gave him a hug anyway. I don't know if you're supposed to do that, but but I did. It was just good to see him. You know, he's such a good guy. Yeah.
Hug a cop. There you go. Well, we're hitting the road. John's down in L.A., so we're going to get on out of here. Folks, take some go Netflix and Dave and John, which is what we've replaced Chill with, right?
Right.
Because we don't want to chill with you. We just want you to hang out. Tell us what you
unless do. Unless you're hot, and then we right. will.
Well, in John's case, yeah. In my case, I'm married, so.
Right.
Send us an email, Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com, or you can text us 209-LOL-DATE, and check out our website, davesaidjohnsaid.com. I'm Dave.
I'm John.
And we will see you sometime on the other side of September would be my best guess, but stay tuned to the website because we'll keep posting classic Dave and John's and good stuff like that that keep you entertained and keep you Netflixed. How'd that go? Okay, take care, everybody. We'll see you later.
Everyone wants to be like me.
The Dave and John Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Network. Copyright 2017. All rights reserved. For more information or to whine about how the show offended you, log on to facebook.com/Dave and John Show.
When's anybody gonna be satisfied?
Damn it! I told you so!
It's not about anything else.
Go to your room and lock the door, cause when you try it once, you wanna try it some more. Size doesn't matter, and that's a fact. It might be small, but it's a big impact. Oh. Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of corn nuts and bust a nut. You can do it at school, just don't get caught. It takes a few minutes if you don't delay. Take your time, make it last all day.
Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of corn nuts and bust a nut. They're lightly toasted and hard as well.
Enjoy yourself, we won't tell.
Corn Nuts, an intensely crunchy corn snack, comes in seven nut-busting flavors. Bust a nut at a convenience store near you.